There's an amazing phenomenon that occurs in some human beings when things are going well. They actively seek something to be upset about. This is a distinctly first world problem. Schools across the country will dispatch a SWAT team to the cafeteria should any student dare bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, with or without the crust cut off, because many of the delicate little flower children could go into anaphylactic shock with their peanut allergy. In the third world, where starvation reigns, peanut allergies are virtually non-existent. When Anderson Cooper of 60 Minutes went to Niger to report on the devastating malnutrition of children in that country and the revolutionary vitamin-enriched peanut butter-based product called Plumpy Nut, he asked the head of Doctors Without Borders about the scourge of peanut allergies sweeping the developed world. "We just don't see it," Dr. Susan Shepherd responded. "In developing countries, food allergy is not nearly the problem it is in industrialized countries." While the peanut is revolutionizing famine relief and saving lives, it's being banned in schools across the United States as if it were a weapon of mass destruction. Is there something uniquely unhealthy or deficient about the biological makeup of children in the richest country on the planet? Or is something different, something sociological at work? A mere century ago, and for all of human existence, almost everyone's daily lives revolved around one simple goal: not dying. You'd get up in the morning, work all day to gather enough food to keep yourself and your family alive, hope you didn't hurt yourself in that process, and go to bed with the need to repeat that pattern again tomorrow. A broken limb could mean hunger. A simple cut could lead to an infection that caused death. And there was always a possibility of flu taking you out, or a drought, or insects, or simply a stranger coming along and killing you. Life was a daily struggle for literal survival for most of human existence. Around the time of the Industrial Revolution and the years that followed, life changed dramatically. What was backbreaking work became mechanized, saving effort and lives. Simple diseases such as tetanus were defeated. Instead of meaning death, they could now be beaten with a quick shot from a doctor, freeing people to go about their day. But something in our reptilian brains won't let us accept how good we have it, how safe we are. We seek out threats, create problems, because it's easier to blame something external for our difficulties than it is to accept blame for our bad decisions or realize that, for lack of a better phrase, shit happens. You'd think a generation raised in the 1970s with that bumper sticker on the back of so many station wagons would have come to terms with that fact, but there's too much political gain to be made from laying responsibility on others that the social sciences have evolved to excuse manufacturing machines for failure. Nothing exemplifies this psychobabble of pop psychology like the concepts of microaggressions and privilege. They're like a blanket absolution from the Pope to all Catholics. They're your cosmic get-out-of-jail-free card. For the uninitiated, meaning the sane, a microaggression is defined by Merriam-Webster's as a commitment or action that subtly and often unconsciously or unintentionally express a prejudice attitude towards a member of a marginalized group, such as a racial minority. To put that in plain English, a microaggression is a transgression or insensitivity, usually racial or gender-based, so minute that it's possible that neither the offender nor the offended realize it or recognize it as such at the time. It's really the concept of third-party offense that is now treated as a rational assault of some kind, and also a new level of insanity in a time when there are very few overt or covert offenses to crusade against.